faces a choice. This is Battleground America. Here's Tara Servatius.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Insane Things Podcast. Yep, it's Thursday, but with the 4th of July weekend, I'm starting a day early. Running down this week's list of insane things. Again, these have to be things we've never seen before. And as I point out every week, it's a wonder I can do this every week. Insane thing number 8. Normally, I don't include a link in the sources if I've got audio because you can hear it, right? But I did for this because CNN's John Berman looks like he's in physical pain having to report the awesome 147,000 jobs created under Trump. They'd gotten their hopes up because the ADP numbers look like private sector job loss. Finally, they'd have their victory, their gloom, their doom. No. Hopes dashed again.
Again, since, you know, March and before, there were predictions that the tariffs, all that tariff policy was going to lead perhaps to inflation, would lead to job losses, predictions of doom. That doom just hasn't happened yet.
Nah, it didn't. Sorry, John. But what did, we've never seen before. The story really starts last week when the New York Post reported that 1 million illegal immigrants who had been in the workforce have self-deported since Trump took office in January. The New York Times put that number around 770,000, so it's somewhere in that neighborhood. This was a crisis, we were told. Americans are never going to do those Oh, look what just happened. In the latest U.S. jobs report, something we've never seen before. Certainly not in recent years, when most of the new job creation went to non-Americans, either those illegally here or those here on visas. Guess what? Native-born workers gained 830,000 jobs, while foreign-born workers lost 348,000 jobs. Wow, Americans sure showed up fast to take those jobs. What else is happening here? Well, under Joe Biden, you remember, he announced that he wasn't really going to do workforce raids anymore. Trump is, despite that little blip a couple weeks ago, Trump is doing workforce raids. So when employers have to hire new people, suddenly Americans are a viable choice. Now, they'd prefer to hire an illegal so they can go right on participating in the great American tax evasion scheme, that is illegal immigration. But now it's looking too risky. And folks, this job report shows us why we just got record wage gains. Remember, I reported that last week? In just 5 months, blue collar workers have gotten the largest ever raise under any president in recorded history in their wages, a staggering 1.7%. When illegals are sent home or deport in large numbers, the size of the workforce shrinks. It was always artificially and illegally diluted. And when the size of the workforce shrinks, you know your economics, wages go up. Insane thing number 7. While President Trump tries to save capitalism, the economy, in the American way, Democrats are headed in a distinctly different direction, with Zohran Mamdani winning that New York City primary. If you look up the definition of communism on Google, you'll see it's where the centralized government controls the, quote, means of production, which is exactly what Mamdani says Democrats need to do in a recently resurfaced podcast video.
We are unapologetic about our socialism. There are also other issues that we firmly believe in, whether it's BDS, right, or whether it's the end goal of seizing the means of production.
That wasn't actually the insane part. No, this was. From liberal U.S. Senator Chris Murphy.
Do you think that Mamdani is the future of the Democratic Party?
Well, I think his message, his economic message, is the future of the party.
Insane thing number 6. I once watched a long-form interview with a Georgetown University professor who studied speech control and censorship in the former USSR. And I was shocked to find it was nothing like what I thought. One of the ways they controlled people and kept them silent was by making them affirm things that patently and obviously weren't true. It was a form of humiliation, of degradation. They would proclaim things that were obviously not true. North Korea does this all the time. The government will pronounce things like Kim Jong-un writes a book a day. He's written 736 so far. Obviously, he doesn't do that. But if you don't affirm, or if you suggest he's only written like 3 books in his life, you could be disappeared. It's highly effective because even members of the party in good standing who are on board with the ideology are terrified to speak in public because there have been so many of these proclamations of things that you can't deny that they might accidentally trip themselves up. We've never seen this in America until the transgender movement. This is our first forced affirmation, forced speech movement. That is a dude. Yeah, but it's a woman. That woman just won an international boxing title. Don't slip up and call him a he. You could be canceled. It's classic Marxist speech control. In New York today, business owners can be fined for deliberately or repeatedly misgendering someone. What if you could go back and forcibly wipe all the lies out of the record books and reassert the truth? President Trump made the University of Pennsylvania do just that this week. Force them to acknowledge that the swimmer, Leah Thomas, was a man the whole time and in a humiliating way. Well, for the university. At one point, the women's swim team at the University of Pennsylvania had been terrorized and threatened by school administrators and their own coaches about what might happen to them if they opened their mouth, complained, or refused to affirm that that dude, who you can clearly tell is a dude in a woman's bathing suit, is in fact not a woman. You wouldn't dare say that. Well, this time, thanks to Donald Trump, it was the University of Pennsylvania that was forced to affirm reality in order to keep their funding. They stripped every medal, every title, and every record from Leah Thomas, whose real name is Will. Other parts of the deal are just as glorious. Those titles were restored to the women who actually won them, and the University of Pennsylvania was required to write a personal letter to each woman informing her in writing that her title had been restored and apologizing. Insane thing number 5. P. Diddy convicted on 2 out of 5 counts. That's not the insane part. No, the insane part is who the lead prosecutor who led the Diddy prosecution team actually was. Maureen Comey. That name sound familiar? That's because she's James Comey's daughter. She's a federal prosecutor with the Southern District of New York. It's weird that Diddy was tried there, given that most of his crimes were committed in California. But you'll see why it happened in a minute. See, the really weird thing about Maureen Comey being the lead of the prosecution team here is her other body of work. You know who else she was the prosecutor for? Before I tell you that, you ought to check out the UK Daily Mail's body of work on the eerie similarities between the way that Diddy operated and the way that Epstein operated. They all but say it. These were twin blackmail operations run by somebody. Diddy was just the Hollywood arm of the Epstein operation. The whole thing was one big honeypot to get compromise on people so someone could control them. I don't know if any of that's true. But I'll string together a bunch of facts that are true. You make of them what you will. Now back to Maureen Comey. Who else was she the lead prosecutor for? Ghislaine Maxwell. Yeah, the pimp for Jeffrey Epstein. Speaking of Jeffrey Epstein, Maureen Comey didn't. Oh, yes, she did. She was also on the prosecution team for Epstein and would have prosecuted him, except he did not kill himself. Under some very strange circumstances. Wait, how many federal prosecutors are there in the entire country? Roughly 10,000. How many prosecutorial federal districts are there? About 94. I mean, what are the odds? And Maureen Comey really did do a masterful job when you consider how much talent it actually takes to convict a woman of working as a pimp for a man, Epstein, without ever releasing the names of a single one of the pedophile Johns who bought the underage girls Ghislaine Maxwell was selling. Anything else of interest that Maureen Comey might be up to? Glad you asked. You know how we've never been able to get the names of the pedophiles who purchased the children, the underage kids, the girls from Jeffrey Epstein? Yeah, that's the work of Maureen Comey, too. She has worked diligently to keep over 40 documents containing just that information from ever being released to the public, fighting on behalf of the federal government to keep that documentation a secret, despite FOIA after FOIA after FOIA lawsuit. Now, I don't know if any of this is connected, but it's worth mentioning at this point that James Comey, you remember, ran a honeypot operation illegally, I might add, on the Trump campaign. And when you say honeypot, what's a honeypot? Honeypot is an agent that was trained to get close to and seduce the target so as to either have compromise on them, get embarrassing information on them, or the sex itself ends up being the scandal that brings you down. James Comey, we learned over the last year, sent multiple honeypots into the Trump campaign to target him and everyone around him, which was illegal because in order to do that in America, you have to have a predicate. In other words, evidence of a crime in order to send someone into an organization to spy like this. Comey didn't have any, which is probably why he did the investigation off the books, never filed it on the computers, and handled it, all of his assets, personally. Which shows you how Comey likes to operate. In fact, it looks a lot like the Epstein operation, and maybe even the Diddy operation. But that's just speculation on my part. I know this. It'd be absolutely wild to sit down with the Comey family for a July 4th celebration and see what kind of conversations go on there in between pass the mustard for the hot dog, please. What do they all do after the fireworks? Walk down the beach, find seashells, talk about killing Donald Trump? Remember 86-47? What a weird family. Speaking of James Comey, I'm so sick of this guy. We're on to insane thing number four. If you've been listening to the podcast in recent weeks, you know of the brewing scandal. I'm hoping this is the one that gets the public on the same page with us in terms of being okay with us clearing out maybe 2/3 of the FBI. That's how bad this is. We learned a couple of weeks ago that the FBI had learned that the Chinese were using the data of millions of TikTok users in America to create tens of thousands of fake licenses in order to generate tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of fake ballots, and that we'd even captured a tranche of these fake licenses being sent into America, smuggled in by the Chinese via Hong Kong through the Chicago O'Hare Airport, about 19,000 fake licenses. That was just one tranche. So the FBI knew damn well the Chinese were serious about this, but they hid it from Congress, even scrubbed it off the system. This week, Senator Chuck Grassley got even more and released it, over 40 pages of it. And this stuff is jaw-dropping. There's even emails that show FBI insiders, you can't tell who because their names are blacked out, talking about how they have to essentially hide or destroy all of the evidence that China was trying to toss the election for Joe Biden because it would cause a problem for Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI. And why is that? Because Wray perjured himself. That's a felony before Congress. You don't often get to hear an FBI director commit a felony. Here he is, lying to Congress under oath. That's a felony that carries 5 years in prison.
Right, but your answer is clear. You've not seen any widespread fraud by mail. And it's something the FBI watches continuously to make sure that that's not happening.
So that's something we would investigate seriously.
Absolutely.
Aggressively.
So the next question is...
So the FBI faked the Russia collusion hoax about supposed interference in our election, hid the actual election interference by China to help Joe, then destroyed the evidence of Chinese interference to protect Christopher Wray, who committed perjury, lying about it to Congress. If you've lost track, that's four blockbuster crimes. That's the Chinese committing fraud in our election, crime number one. Crime number two, the destruction of that evidence is a crime in itself. Crime number three, Christopher Wray perjuring himself to Congress, then the cover-up of that crime, which necessitated the destruction of the election interference, that's crime number four. But there's hints of so much more here. I won't go deep into it. You could follow the links. But all of these documents discuss a Chinese entity tied to these operations with references to compromise, i.e. blackmail material, on U.S. figures. They also reference Chinese operatives funneling money through intermediaries to U.S. campaigns. Bet they were Democrat. By the way, China is sneaking money to the Democrats. That's a felony. You can't do that. Pages 35 through 38 of the Grassley documents talk about whistleblower claims of retaliation against agents who raise concern about this within the FBI. Agents deliberately withholding all of this from Congress to protect Christopher Wray and what's called, quote, financial contributions to political campaigns and covert operations targeting U.S. political figures by China. Didn't I tell y'all that the Chinese, the Democrat Party, and the FBI were merging so you can't tell where one starts and the other ends? There you go. Insane thing number three. We now have total confirmation from the CIA director, the Russia collusion hoax was fake. John Ratcliffe, Trump's CIA director, said, quote, this is from the New York Post, this was Obama, Comey, Clapper, and Brennan deciding we're going to screw Trump, unquote. And here's how they did it. This was another one of these weird operations, much like the James Comey personally controlled honey operation against Trump, where Clapper, Obama, and Brennan personally controlled the intelligence assessment. An internal CIA review shows that Brennan, Obama's CIA director, dismissed high-level warnings from CIA Russia experts that using the Steele dossier, which was a Clinton campaign opposition research paper, did not meet even the most basic intel collection standards and risked the CIA's credibility. They disagreed strongly that it was true, so they were silenced. Brennan handpicked the agents who did the assessment of Russia collusion, and when there was pushback, he got rid of the ones who didn't like it. Then they classified the whole thing so that nobody could check their handiwork and selectively leaked parts of it so that the media could shape the Russia collusion narrative. I don't know how well you remember the Russia collusion story, but I'll never forget it. It went on for years. At the high point in it, Newsbusters did a study and found on average 60% of mainstream media newscasts were consumed with some aspect of the Russia collusion hoax. Namely, it had two parts, that Donald Trump and Russia were in some sort of collusion, or Russia had some sort of hold over Trump, and two, that Russia had rigged the U.S. election, colluded to rig it to get Trump elected over Hillary, who is, of course, the rightful winner of the election. That pattern of selectively leaking bad or fake classified intel while holding back real intel that debunks it is exactly the same pattern we saw last week with Iran, the New York Times, and CNN, where they leak low confidence intel, the whole idea that we didn't really do much damage at Fordo. And then the media, wink, wink, nod, nod, they know what to do. They leave out the part where it's low confidence and the lie is complete. The public is misled, or it was in the days before X. I don't think they'd be able to pull any of this off today. That brings us to insane thing number two. I've been telling you for about a week now that we're not done in our battle with Iran over its nuclear program, because the nuclear program isn't done. It's still operating in at least two locations. That our bombing sure probably set them back, but now the Pentagon is admitting exactly what I've been telling y'all for a week. This isn't over.
Current assessments by this department think it's been degraded or delayed by 1 to 2 years?
I think we're thinking probably closer to 2 years, like degraded their program by 2 years. But
at a minimum, that's an admission by the Pentagon spokesperson Sean Parnell. We're nowhere near done. Now watch everything that's happening this week. Netanyahu goes to the White House for a visit. A bill is filed in Congress to transfer our bunker busters and the B-2 bombers to Israel. The Iranian parliament votes not only to continue with the nuke program, but to accelerate it. and a high-ranking cleric puts a second death fatwa on Trump. That's a death threat, simultaneous with a call to all believers to kill him because he's an enemy of Allah. But hey, it's the second one of those that Trump's got, and the first one, and those around him too, came from no less than the Ayatollah Khomeini himself. We are going to have to kill these people. Or Israel will. I don't care who. But I'm afraid we're running out of time, folks. Do you notice what's happened lately? Couple of things I've been pointing out to you. Jerusalem Post last week, the foreign minister of Israel said that the only reason they hadn't killed Khomeini is they hadn't been able to get to him. He was asked, well, you know, is Trump going to give you permission to do that? And he said, we don't need anybody's permission. We're going to do it if we can. Did Trump react to that? No. Did Trump drop another F-bomb on TV over it? No. Did Trump tell them at least publicly not to do it? No. Now, notice what's going on. And this really scared me this week. The foreign minister of Iran actually came out and said, you know, you're right. Yeah, gosh, shucks. You did destroy our nuclear program. It's going to be damaged for a long time. This while they're threatening to kill Trump, vowing to destroy Israel, and now vowing to destroy us with a nuclear bomb. Why'd the foreign minister say that? To buy time to complete the bomb. And they may not need much. The UK Telegraph reports about a place in Iran called Pickaxe Mountain, Iran's new hidden nuclear fortress. It's an ultra-secure tunnel complex far deeper than Fordo, and it's right next to Natanz, which we did destroy. The IAEA has been denied entrance there. The head of the IAEA, Rafael Grossi, believes it's actually part of the heart of the nuclear program. It's still standing. It hasn't been touched at all. Our bombs, at least not in the bombing formation we did this time, probably couldn't destroy it. Even scarier is Ifshahan. It's one of the three sites we did hit in Midnight Hammer, but we didn't hit it with a bunker buster. We didn't bother. Why? Because it's much, much deeper than Fordo. In fact, the speculation's been we probably couldn't get it all with a bunker buster. So what do? We simply cave the roof in with a tomahawk. The fear of many in the international media, it's mine too. Remember how our government said that we watch for the transfer of nuclear material and we could sniff it out if they were moving it? We assured the public they didn't. That actually scares me more. It scares me because it's probably deep inside Pickaxe Mountain, or more than likely, it's way, way down inside Ifshahan. Ifshahan is the beating heart of the Chinese nuclear weapons program. You probably think I just misspoke there. I said the Chinese nuclear weapons program. No, Iran's program is the Chinese nuclear weapons program. Ifshahan was home to not one, not two, but three Chinese-created nuclear reactors. 3,000 scientists work there, many of them Chinese. Again, it's the one, like Pickaxe Mountain, that goes way, way deeper than Fordo does. Folks, if this is truly the end of our attempted destruction or Israel's attempted destruction of this program, we are doomed. It is only a matter of time before an EMP blows up over our country, over our grid, or one of our naval ships is hit with a nuclear fissile material tipped missile. Something is going to blow. The only way forward for the moment is to try to kill the entire theocracy, hoping that a groundswell, because 80% of that country does not want to be ruled by them, can overthrow what's left. This is a dire situation. But you'd never know that to listen to Donald Trump, who did a very strange thing this week. He actually gave China permission to buy the Iranian oil and then encouraged them to buy it. That's Joe Biden's strategy. In fact, it's exactly what provided the $300 billion to accelerate the building of the nuclear program to the edge of having the bomb. In other words, Trump put Joe Biden's regime back in place, not the sanctions that he'd had on him before, which were just like a stranglehold. I mean, Trump had really brought the Ayatollahs to their knees. I mean, those people were on the verge of overthrowing them out of desperation because they didn't have enough food under the last Trump regime. I don't know what Trump is doing, but I do know this. All the signs I've just laid out for you, this isn't over, not by a long shot. At a minimum, we're going to have to go back again, or Israel is, before the Trump administration ends. But again, I'm not even sure we have that much time. We may only have weeks. Insane thing number one, kind of hurt my heart a little bit, because it's a reminder of how utterly alone Trump really is in his fight to save America. Despite the 10,000 additional ICE agents that are funded in the big, beautiful bill, there is no way on the Lord's green earth that Donald Trump is going to get out all 12 million illegal immigrants without help. But he had a plan. Back in February, he asked every single Republican governor in the country to join him in the deportation fight. He had a brilliant idea. Let me deputize all the law enforcement officers in your state as federal officers so they can legally remove illegal immigrants and detain them. Right now, they can't because of years of Democrat ACLU lawsuits, which they've won, that have said, hey, you know, local police, state police, they don't have the jurisdiction to detain illegals. That's why illegals are allowed to drive off, you know, when they have an auto accident, like everybody else would, rather than being detained. Well, he said, let me, you know, at least deputize your state, like, you know, police, highway patrol. Well, folks, you know what makes me sad? Only one Republican governor, just one, answered the call. Just one helped him. And in terms of Republicans, ironically, it was one of Trump's greatest enemies, Ron DeSantis, who, of course, challenged him in the primary. Folks, when you get more help from a guy who just about anyone would say is Trump's enemy than you do from these fast-talking Republican governors who act like they're Trump's friends, many of whom have had his endorsement and have returned bupkis for it, it kind of moves you. And you could tell when touring Alligator Alcatraz this week, Donald Trump was moved by how Ron DeSantis had responded.
Ron, I'd like to thank you personally. You are my friend and you'll always be my friend. And we may have some skirmishes even in the future. I doubt it, but I will always come back because we just seem to, we have blood that seems to match pretty well. We have a relationship that's been a very strong one for a long period of time, and I appreciate it. Very much appreciate it.
DeSantis, in his zeal for the project, actually took it a step further than Trump had even proposed, coming up with the idea to deputize Florida National Guard members who are lawyers as immigration judges. The average deport time once you hit Alcatraz will be about 48 hours. You'll have your hearing. There is a runway right there. You'll fly off and off you go. DeSantis also used the occasion this week to announce they're opening a second facility just like Alligator Alcatraz in North Florida.
The president was very thankful. Secretary Noem was very thankful. And we're happy to do it. But all the red states at a minimum need to step up and do this. If all red states are doing what Florida's doing, even if it's at a smaller scale, because they may be smaller, you're going to see massive numbers for the deportations. And Biden let in how many millions of people? We need these types of solutions if we want to get the job done.
This would have been a great time for other GOP governors to announce they were doing the same. Nobody did this week, but maybe it's a little early. Maybe next week they'll step up. Meanwhile, Trump slogs on by himself, hitting an extraordinary new historic low in illegal border crossings. Just 6,070 illegal immigrants encountered at the southern border in June. That's a record-setting low, 15% lower than the previous record set in March. That underscores the effectiveness of Donald Trump's border enforcement and the job that the military is doing on the border. Contrast that with the average 10,000 unvetted migrants who were legally crossing the southern border every day at the peak of Joe Biden's invasion, most of whom were released into the country. How many we released this month? Zero. For Democrats, the reality that their voter drive is well and truly over and that Trump may manage to deport a lot of their voters, folks, they didn't see it's coming. They thought, well, okay, worst case scenario is going to be like the last administration when we used judges to order Trump to reopen the border for months at a time. And he wasn't really that serious about deportation compared to the way he is now. I mean, he still did a good job, but I mean, it's nothing compared to the way that he is now. They didn't see this coming. Then they thought they'd stop it with lawfare. Well, last week was devastating for them in that regard because they lost their ability to do nationwide injunctions. The Supreme Court took it away from district court judges. So what do? Cause a constitutional crisis. The second, not the first, the second district judge this week to overrule the Supreme Court, issuing a nationwide injunction. What they're trying this time is they're going to try to do it as part of a class action lawsuit. Stephen Miller, deputy chief of staff for Donald Trump, captured the sheer insanity of what this Obama judge did in a tweet on Twitter. He writes, to try to circumvent the Supreme Court ruling on nationwide injunctions, a Marxist judge has declared that all potential future illegal aliens on foreign soil, e.g., a large portion of the planet Earth, are part of a protected global class entitled to admission into the United States. The judge ruled that there wasn't really an emergency on the border, so Trump has no right to block these people from coming into the country, and he's going to have to reinstate catch and release. The left is making a desperate gamble here, hoping that if it's under the cover of a class action lawsuit, open borders friendly justices Amy Coney Barrett and John Roberts will rule in their favor. Now, the judge stayed the order to open the borders for 2 weeks to give Trump time to appeal. Here's what's truly terrifying here, folks. This could go straight to the Supreme Court or it could go to a circuit court. If Trump gets the wrong panel of judges and they order that border open, well, Trump has deported 225,000 illegal immigrants. But remember, they are the most vile, most vicious. Remember, he was going after those with criminal records. They're the worst of the worst. And we got a lot of them in the beginning when he was sworn in because they didn't see him coming. They thought it would be like his last administration. That gave us the element of surprise, and we got them. They will surge right back over that border, and the whole thing will be for nothing. They'll be much harder to catch this time on the inside. Folks, this is going to be this is literally life or death for many, many Americans, these people coming back into our country. There's a lot of analysts right now on TV saying, oh, don't worry, illegals will know better. They're not going to walk back and go over the border. No, not the normal average ones who work in factories, but the cartel hooligans. Oh, they're going to beat a path for the border. Democrats are counting on that because Trump has done grievous harm to the critical cartel human trafficking networks they count on to run their voter drive. Getting a ruling like that for the left would be a huge win, but it's still something of a legal long shot. But here's what else they're actually really doing. They know when it comes down to it, if they can get a judge to rule that he has to open that border, Trump knows what's coming across it. The worst of the worst in the world. Murderers who were wanted by Interpol when they were caught at our borders, but Joe Biden released them. Terrorists. I mean, this is a nightmare. And that's what the left is counting on, that Trump will finally do what they can't believe he hasn't done to date, defy one of these judges. And they're figuring Trump will defy these judges to keep Americans safe from these people that they've imported, this particularly heinous class of criminal, that it'll finally push Trump over the edge and they'll get what they so desperately want, to be able to say, see, for the rest of his term, he's a dictator. He defied a judge's order. Folks, this is truly life or death. And life to the Democrats is cheap. They don't give a damn who comes back into this country. Fingers crossed, y'all, because Trump, Hegseth, and the military stand between us and some of the worst monsters on this planet who will stream back over that border. And folks, one more thought. The timing of this is truly an act of desperation because if that big, beautiful bill passes, looks like it will as I'm recording this. Hakeem Jeffries is still filibustering. But if the big, beautiful bill passes, Trump will have $70 billion with which to deport. He'll have a fully funded wall and he'll have that deportation force of 10,000. But if anybody can get this done, it's Trump.
Battleground America with Tara Servatius. Please subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Share with friends, family, and other free thinkers. Thanks for listening.